Moncrief on News Talk.
Cathy Delaney is with us once again. This is when hobbies go bad.
This is when hobbies not just go bad, Sean, become fatal.
Yeah.
These get pretty dark. You would be surprised how often the word monopoly appears in homicide reports. It's significant.
We will get to that.
We will get to it, but we're going to start off with a kind of an innocent prank. Well, started off as a relatively innocent prank that went fatally wrong. We're in December 2017. There's a 28-year-old man named Andrew Finch, and he's just at his home in Kansas. It's the evening time. He's hanging out with his mother and his children. He's, by all means, just a normal guy, not doing anything wrong. Never played video games, had no affiliation with anything that unfolded here. He had never heard of these two young men who'd been involved in this story. What happens here is two guys are playing an online game in a kind of gaming chat room. And they start to argue over a bet that they had. We've got Casey Viner, who's 18 years old from North College Hill, Ohio. And he'd been playing Call of Duty in an online tournament on a platform called UMG Gaming. His teammate was a man called Shane Gaskill, 19, from Wichita. So Shane Gaskill lived near where Andrew Finch lived, but not quite the same area.
Okay.
Close enough by. There was a kind of friendly fire incident in this game the two young fellas were playing, in which Gaskill's character killed Viner's by mistake. They lost the match and they lost the bet that he put on the game. $1.50. So not an astronomical amount of money by any means, not even a cup of coffee. But what happened is it sets off this chain of almost unimaginable events. So Viner is absolutely furious and he threatens to swat Gaskill. And swatting in these gaming kind of circles is when one person makes a fake emergency call, reports a hostage situation or a murder in progress, which is designed to send a heavily armed police response to the person's home. So it began in these online gaming communities as a form of retaliation and humiliation, but it had produced serious injuries. So Gaskill, rather than backing down, gives Viner an address. It's a Wichita address, 1033 West McCormick Street. It's where Gaskill used to live, but his family had been evicted from the property in 2016. And he didn't live there anymore. Viner, he sends off this. So Gaskill sends off this address and says, "I dare you," kind of like goading him. And Viner contacts this guy called Tyner Barris. Barris is 25, living in LA, and he's known as a sort of professional swatter in these circles.
That's bizarre.
Isn't it? He's someone that you can call and he'll put in the SWAT call. He'll ring the police and put in bomb scares. He's done it dozens of times. He's got a criminal record for false bomb threats. He's wanted in Florida for making approximately 30 hoax calls to schools. So he does it. He goes off to the library in South Los Angeles and over a voiceover IP app where you kind of disguise your voice, he calls in the job. He tells the dispatcher that his name is Brian and that he's at the address and that he has shot his father dead, holding his mother and little brother at gunpoint in a closet, and that he had poured gasoline all over the house and was about to set it on fire. So the Wichita police respond with due response, full force. Andrew Finch, meanwhile, who's been sitting at home with his mother and his kids, hears a noise outside and he goes to the front door to see what's happening. So officers are stationed across the street with rifles and they shouted commands at him. So he steps out, but obviously he's very confused, puts his hands in the air, and then he goes to move his hands towards his wristband, obviously not knowing what the call is about or anything else. And an officer, Justin Rapp, across the street fires and shoots him. So Andrew dies immediately on his front porch with his family inside. He's unarmed. He had never played Call of Duty before in his life. He'd never heard of Casey Viner or Shane Gaskill. He had done nothing but been at the wrong place at the wrong time. So the aftermath is a kind of tedious process of figuring out who's involved. Tyler Barris is eventually caught and pleads guilty to 51 charges, including one count of making a false report resulting in death. He's sentenced to 20 years in federal prison I'm sure his old crimes are catching up as well. Casey Viner, who instigated the call, got 15 months. And Shane Gaskill, who gave the address and told Viner to go for it, basically to try something, received a deferred prosecution agreement. The officer was not charged. He was actually later promoted he was doing his job, to be fair. You know, there's an argument about gun control in the States, but he was responding to the call that had come in. The Finch's family had a $5 million lawsuit against the city of Wichita, which they settled for and won. But it's just a mad murder case that just escalated out of two 19 and a 25-year-old goading each other in an online game forum.
Because I can remember that swatting thing was all the rage for a while.
Yeah.
It's mad, though, that somebody could just do that and use voice altering and they can't check whether...
You think they'd knock on the door before they set up the rifles, you know, and they go in and check or send someone over or look at the history of the property or see if there's any calls.
See who lives there and is anyone called Brian living there,
for instance. Maybe call Brian out or, you know, call the person out before they arrive on the front porch and get shot immediately for a little hand movement. It is mental. But at least the people in this got prosecuted. Tyler Barris, the man who kind of did the things, gets the longest sentence of 20 years in federal prison.
Yeah. Now, but if Tyler Barris was presumably paid to make this call.
Yes. And when they...
was it more than 150?
Well, I think he might have done it for his jollies, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of... net loss here is greater than that of the bet. But I think Tyler Barris and Viner were in touch with each other as well after all. They very quickly realised what had happened and they told each other to delete all the evidence. So they tried to get away with it. But he wasn't very good at his hoaxes if he got caught pretty immediately. And already had 30 offences out as well.
Right. Monopoly.
This is banned in my house. We don't play it for this.
Right.
Well, not because of this exact reason. Had there been murders
in the history? It's a pretty good one,
though. It's a good one. So we've got two best friends here, Mark and Michael. They are friends and they've been friends for years, doing things at each other's houses, comfortable enough to argue lightly. And they enjoyed games. And Monopoly, unfortunately, was one of them. So on the 19th of July, 1991, we're in Pennsylvania and the two 20-something-year-old friends are sitting down for a casual game of Monopoly, a midsummer's Monopoly.
Okay.
And Monopoly is a game that is pretty, I suppose, contentious by its nature because one person has to acquire all the wealth and the other person has to lose it in order for the game to be over.
Yeah.
It goes on and on and on. It's tedious. The rules are tedious. And it systematically, I think, turns you against the closest people in your life because you see a lot of their character when you're playing something like this.
Yeah, it depends how they do it. If they're enjoying it.
Yeah. If you're a bad loser, if you're kind of, you know, if you're obnoxious in it, you can see how things would get out of hand. Not this out of hand. So things escalated when they were disagreeing over the rules and the nature of how the game should be played. So the fight became physical, punches were thrown. And at some point, Mark goes out to his car and just casually picks up his bow and arrow. Don't know why he had it. Michael is sitting in his car when Mark comes and shot an arrow into his chest. So Mark was convicted of third degree murder and sentenced to 9 to 25 years in prison. But in the same year, the same summer, over in Salt Lake City, there's another Monopoly argument in which a couple named Jerry and Cassie Robertson beat their housemate Gerald Thomas to death with a claw hammer after an argument over a different game of Monopoly. So they had, in this one, there had been a row over, again, how the game would be played or who was winning or etc. And the Robertsons actually waited for Thomas to fall asleep and they went into him in his bedroom and beat him with a hammer until he was dead, robbed all the money in his pockets and skedaddled.
Because of Monopoly.
Because of Monopoly. Just ban it. Take it away.
Yeah. You'd wonder, though, there must have been something underneath
that.
Well,
that's the thing.
That's premeditated. They waited before they did it.
Yeah. It definitely brings things to the surface, you know, some sort of compounded arguments that were there. There's a fatal error in Monopoly. And before you know it, you're fighting for your life.
Yes. Right. OK, now, this one is probably the bizarrest one, but I suppose it's slightly bizarre because... was there actually a crime committed, even though it's exceptionally creepy what happened? But
questionable here.
Yeah.
This is one of my favourite stories of things just escalating to a point of utter bizarre, right? So there's a Facebook group dedicated entirely to clam chowder. Now, there are many hobby groups on the internet that are dedicated to very niche interests. This one is not dedicated to cooking or in general, but to kind of appreciating clam chowder and its nature and all of the things it has to offer the world. It's history.
Because I don't know if this is, there's an episode of The Simpsons where somebody is accused of murder over the pronunciation of the word chowda.
It comes up when it comes on that court scene. We should use that as the audio clip. We do actually. So there is the thing that kind of sets this story up is that there are variations of clam chowder. You've got the New England style, which is that white, creamy, probably closer to our, you know, but you can get it with a pint of Guinness when you're at your seaside holidays. What do you call it?
Chowder.
So you got that one that's creamy, and then you've got the Manhattan style tomato based one, which is, according to clam chowder experts and enthusiasts, a total like an assault on what clam chowder should be.
Yes.
Any tomato in it is not acceptable. And then you've got the Rhode Island chowder, which is a clear broth, and it kind of throws away the cream or tomato debate and says that both are completely unacceptable. We actually have a small little clip of Martha Stewart, who I think we should trust on how she makes her clam chowder.
So good. The most delicious New England clam chowder you've ever tasted. The word chowder comes from the pan, the chaudière, with 6 slices of bacon. Sauté it until it is crispy. Now sauté 1 cup of pearl onions and 2 stalks of nice green celery cut into quarter-inch pieces crosswise. Sauté this just until the vegetables start to sweat. And now you can add 3 tablespoons of flour. Slowly add 1/2 cup of water and add 2 cups of unsalted clam juice. Now add your thyme and your bay leaf, 2 bay leaves, already smelling very delicious. A sprinkling of black pepper, and now add your potatoes. Bring it to a boil and then simmer it until the potatoes are tender. 2 pounds of shucked clams, 2 ears of white corn, fresh.
That was Martha Stewart there, who did go to prison, unlike any of the people in the story that Cassie is telling us.
We should go deep on Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
So this story, we start off in the Clam Chowder Appreciation Society group, and the distinctions amongst the chowder really matters to these people. We have 4 key figures in this story. You've got George, who is a Manhattan man, tomato based, firm in his convictions, thinks everything else is an abomination. There's Billy, who makes Rhode Island chowder and who is just kind of, she's there to just get recipes and get advice, not a particularly contentious character. Then we have Mallory, is just kind of Billy's friend and jumps to her defense at all the time. But then we have Alice, who is a New England chowder loyalist, who's been in the group for years, pretty dormant and totally unremarkable, until one day she decides to pop up and tell Billy in the comments that Rhode Island, what she thinks of Rhode Island clam chowder. Now, her language could not be repeated on air. It is abhorrent. She gets very heated and tells Billy to go and do something quite graphic and totally unsuitable with her Rhode Island clam chowder. And this starts kind of getting reactions from the rest of the group. So George jumps in, possibly in anticipation that Alice is going to come after Manhattan chowder next, and takes the attack very personally. So this argument kind of escalates back and forth and gets loads of people involved, to the point where there's splinter groups set up, there's disputes, there's just rows for weeks. It's going on for ages. People are joining the group because of this sort of creative nature of the comments that are going back and forth over the disputes on chowder. But then George gets Alice's personal information, her home address, her phone numbers, her workplace, all of it, and doxes her on the internet, reveals where she lives. Now, doxing is done when people are trying to direct a lot of disdain and hatred towards one person. Only George was particularly interested in ruining Alice's life. And what he does, instead of just exiting the group, is he starts and persistently posts clam chowder to Alice in the post. So regularly, she's waking up to receive a Manhattan chowder on her doorstep. The police do get involved because it's light stalking, I would imagine.
Yeah. But and is this chowder frozen or?
It is not. It's actually, in some cases, still warm when it's on the porch, which means it's a local kind of creep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must be leaving, or he's enlisted the services of someone else. Maybe there's a professional chowder guy on the internet. There seems to be a job for everyone. The police get involved because Alice's husband finds the whole thing absolutely bizarre. But unfortunately, the police do nothing because they say no crime has technically been committed. The kind of culmination in it is that George remains in the group. The others sort of leave away, and he comments, every day on every single post.
Still,
there is made about clam chowder. Yeah.
And how do the others on the
They've learned to kind of ignore George, and yeah. they just go about their regular clam chowder appreciation activities.
Yeah. Mm. And it's astonishing that from George's point of view that he must be aware that people all over the place are talking about this,
but
he still persists with it.
I mean, often you would find people who behave in a bizarre way like this are completely unaware that yeah. people are talking about them because they persist with their behaviour, and he continues to act in ways that are, I suppose, beyond the guidelines of the Clam Chowder Appreciation Society. Other members tried to step in to get him to become Ruly again and step in line, and he refused.
Yeah, but there's no one to kick him out.
There's no one to kick him out. I think he's one of the moderators in the group. Just goes to show if you're passionate about your clam chowder.
Yeah. Power corrupts, absolutely. Cassie, thanks a million.
No problem.
As ever, that was Cassie Delaney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.